We have a number of questions I'd like to ask that have been posed by our audience. I think there's a lot of depth, and these are some really good questions. So we'll start with you, Guido. The question is, what are the advantages or disadvantages for electing to use Section 179 versus bonus depreciation?
Okay, thanks, Jeff. The advantage is that Section 179 is an election, and you don't have to do all or of the amount. So if you have purchased a $100,000 piece of equipment, under the current law, bonus depreciation is presumed to be used, and it's at the 100% level, so that full $100,000 would come as a depreciation deduction to the particular farmer. Now, if that gets us into a negative, and that may not be where the farmer wants to be, or they may want to zero it out, they could elect out of bonus depreciation and then use Section 179 to use the exact amount. So it's kind of a surgical type of action that they could use. So I kind of like using Section 179. It gives me a little bit of flexibility, but bonus depreciation is also a tool available, but I like it a little bit better because bonus is all or nothing, and the presumption of the law is that you're going to use bonus and you have to elect out of using bonus, and you elect out by class. So if you elect out of the five-year asset class, then every five-year asset is going to be taken out from using bonus. And that now with the new tax law is going to be a little different because breeding animals, and dairy animals and draft animals are five-year assets, but now brand new pieces of machinery and equipment are also five-year assets. So if you elect out, you've elected out of all the breeding animals and also some of the new assets.
Thanks, Guido. I do want to remind our audience that you see some polling questions coming across your screen. We would greatly appreciate you responding to those questions as they appear. JC, I'll turn to you. The first question in the queue is, with the TCJA changes to accelerated depreciation, what advice should be considered before depreciation recapture?
I guess what I'm trying to figure out all the pieces here. Essentially, when you look at depreciation, you've got a deferral. Depreciation always has, it's a write down of the value of the asset based upon what we think the asset value would decline due to use, wear, tear, etc. And the law basically allows us to take that down to zero, whether we use accelerated depreciation or any type of depreciation. And consequently, what occurs here is that when we sell that asset for less or something greater than our cost basis, we have to recapture it at the date of sale or in that year. So when you're looking at this thing, the question then becomes, if I write it off completely using the expenses or bonus depreciation, and I only expect to use this thing 2 or 3 years before I sell it, you're going to recapture 100%. If that is your timing or planning horizon, you may be wiser, or the farmer may be wiser, to not use the accelerated from the standpoint of bonus, et cetera. We may want to use regular makers or even the 100%, or I mean the ADS rules, to spread that and cost out, not have as large a recapture in the date that asset sold. So I guess what you really have to look at is, what is the planning horizon of using this piece of equipment and before it's sold, and then what level of depreciation expense helps us then manage our tax liability?
Okay.
I
Thank
think it's probably the best way to answer that question.
Okay, good. Thank you. I want to stay with you, JC, for this next question. Can the IRC 1033 involuntary conversion law be used in the case of wildfire forcing herd liquidations?
Again, it's an involuntary conversion. Yes, you can. Now, what I've been trying to find out, and I don't know the answer to yet, the weather-related rules allow, if it's a drought, et cetera, or a federal declared disaster area, you can then postpone that replacement period 4 years. From the way I understand it, if it's wildfire forcing liquidation, yes, you can, but you're going to have a 2-year replacement period.
Okay. Guido, you mentioned the repeal of the Obamacare mandate. Does this mean the tax penalty for being uninsured will be $0? And if yes, what impacts might that have on health insurance issue?
Okay, yes, for 2019 going forward, the individual mandate has been repealed, therefore there isn't the penalty. So folks may decide not to pursue health insurance. I know it's very costly for some folks. The issue is, what risk are you willing to bear yourself? And you know, some folks use the emergency room as their physician. That may or may not be a good strategy for long-term health, but the penalty has been removed as of January 1, 2019.
Okay. This next question, either one or both of you can answer. Will the IRS and all the support tax industry filing software be ready by year's end to implement these changes?
It depends. The answer to that is all the software companies are scrambling. They have due dates. They're waiting, and IRS is updating the forms as we speak, and those are being incorporated. The hope is that by mid-January, all of the changes will have been incorporated. Tax practitioners who professionally provide those services will have their updated programs. That's not to say that glitches won't be discovered and that there won't be updates to that software, but I anticipate that there would be software available. I have not yet seen when IRS will start processing tax returns. Sometimes that's the last part of February, sometimes it's the middle part of February, sometimes it's the last part of January. My guess is, looking at all of these changes, that we will probably see somewhere early to mid-February is when tax returns will start to be processed. And that sometimes also answers the question as to when software will be available for usage.
Okay. We have one final question, and it relates to the Farmer's Tax Guide. Will it, the one coming out for, that'll be released for the 2018 tax year, calendar tax year, will that need to be updated? Has it been updated to address the changes from the new Tax Cuts and Job Act?
I'll start in first. It will be updated. We will be looking at that. We spend quite a bit of time every year looking at the prior year Farmer's Tax Guide and seeing what has needs to be changed and updated, and then bringing that into the new material. And we meet with IRS every May to go through with them what things need to be removed, what things need to be added, and what things need to be changed.
Guido, anything to add on that?
No, I know that they're planning, and the publications unit is working very hard. Having said that, I know that IRS has had to pull folks from other divisions that have had publications expertise to bring all the forms and Pub 225 and other publications up into conformance with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. That's job one for the publications division. I expect probably delayed release of some of the pubs, but they will be updated and should reflect the Jobs Tax Cuts and Jobs Act.
Good. Thank you, gentlemen. Your presentations were interesting, quite useful, and your responses to the questions were extremely helpful. I want to remind everyone that we have another webinar, an Ag and Uncertain Times webinar, scheduled for November 14th. It will be titled Expanding Opportunities for Smaller Scale Farms in the Specialty Food Market. we're working on this one. I believe we have a great set of speakers for this one, just like we did today. Before I go on, and we lose everyone, there was another question that popped in from the audience. Can income from involuntary conversion be used to mitigate drought impacts? For example, develop water for livestock needs.
To my knowledge, when we have, and I'm assuming that when what they're saying is, when we have a disaster payment coming to us, then if we need to, we can do some of that well development, et cetera. But I'm a little confused or a little curious if they're looking at from like weather-related sales of livestock issues of the replacement, that has to be used on replacement animals and not really anything else. So I'm not
JC,
sure the best way to handle that. Yes?
Let's say that you've had an involuntary conversion of $30,000, so that's the excess, and that you now have, let's just keep the example simple, 2 years in which to have to replace that income. The farmer can use that $30,000 to develop water or anything else on the farm within that two-year period, but by the close of the 2 years, they are going to have to replace that those animals. And it can be from borrowed money. You don't have to set the $30,000 into a savings account and wait for 2 years down the road. You can go ahead and use that cash flow item in your business to make a good decision. In this case, develop water, for example. It's not going to be like kind for the involuntary conversion, but you can then down the road in 2 years buy those animals back. And if you have to use borrowed money to do that, then you've successfully deferred the income consequence from 2 years prior. I hope that answers the question.
Thanks, Guido.
And I think with that, it's important that someone experience an involuntary conversion, talk to their lender so that if they're going to, to use your example, $30,000 of net after that, however they spend that, they talk to their lender about that expenditures or those expenditures or debt repayment, whatever it is, and know that they need that $30,000 back in the end of 2 years. So they really need to talk to their partners, bankers, et cetera, about this, I believe.
Yes, good point, Jeff.
Yep. And with that, we want to ask you what area or topic of today's seminar would you like to see covered in future webinars? We're open to a variety of topics. We can find speakers to go on those. So if you have ideas for future webinars after November 14th, put those in the chat box or send an email to information@farmmanagement.org, and we will pick that up, and we can put that into our planning process. Also want to say that the speaker slide sets and a recorded version of the webinar is available at the Ag in Uncertain Times website. You can see it there in the middle of your slide, all one word, aginuncertaintimes.farmmanagement, all spelled out, .org. We have some additional information there as well. And so it would be share it with your friends and colleagues and have them go listen to a recording of this webinar. We've mentioned a few URLs and email addresses throughout the webinar. In order to provide you with a single reference for this information, we've compiled a PDF file, which you may download now via the file share pod on your screen. Simply click on the file name listed, then click Save to My Computer button at the bottom to download the file to your desktop or other computer. With that, let me close by again extending our thanks to today's speakers, Guido Vanderhoeven and J.C. Hobbs, for their first-class presentations on income taxes, both the Tax Act as well as strategies for managing one's tax liability. I also want to thank our Ag and Uncertain Times team and their sponsoring institutions for making this webinar and the series of webinars possible. Finally, I'd like to thank all of the participants in today's webinar conference. We sincerely hope that you find today's content of value in your work. Please, again, do not hesitate to email at the website or the email address given before, information@farmmanagement.org. Any questions, we can forward those to the appropriate speaker or other people. We hope to see you again in one of our upcoming programs. Until then, we offer you our sincerest hope for success in meeting the challenges of today's uncertain times. For the Ag and Uncertain Times team, I am Jeff Trunnell, signing off. Thank you very much, and have a great day.